Welcome back to The Late Set. This is Nate Chenin, and today I am solo hosting, which is a strange sensation, but I'm here with you, and I'm excited to cue up one of the conversations that Josh Jackson and I had at the 2025 Exit Zero Jazz Festival, and this is with the trumpeter and bandleader and composer Brandon Woody. Now, if you have not yet heard Brandon Woody, you are in for a treat. He's a Baltimore-born trumpet player who came on the radar just in the last several years. And I have a story to tell about this. Now, buzz is an interesting thing. It can travel in many different ways. And in this case, it came from a couple of friends and colleagues, Giovanni Russinello and Marcus J. Moore, two really wonderful fellow critics who both contribute to the New York Times. A couple of years ago, they were on a year-end episode of the New York Times Popcast. Shout out to the Popcast. And they were asked by host John Caramonica what had them excited about the scene. And both of them agreed that it was this young cat, Brandon Woody. Now, I had heard Brandon's name before, and I had just a tiny bit of sort of grain of salt with this recommendation because Gio and Marcus both come from the D.C. area, and so Brandon is a hometown cat. I said, all right, I am paying attention, but we'll see. And lo and behold, Brandon Woody and his band Upendo came through Solar Myth in the summer of 2024, and I finally had my chance to see the band, experience the band, and I was very quickly a convert. And after the show, I had a chance to talk with Brandon a little bit, and he told me what was then a secret, which is that he had been signed to Blue Note Records. And it was later that year that the news came out, and it was earlier this year that his debut album was released, and the title of that is For the Love of It All. Why don't we hear just a small taste of that record here? So as you can hear from this little taste, For the Love of It All is an album full of spirit. It has a life spark to it, and it has just this power of conviction. And this year, I had the chance to see Brandon Woody demonstrate that on a few different occasions out at the San Francisco Jazz Festival and at the Roots Picnic. You know, he has been just on the grind. And at Exit Zero, there was actually a bit of a mishap leading up to his set. Their bass player was not able to make the gig due to a car accident. So Josh and I saw a performance in which his keyboardist and key collaborator, Troy Long, had to hold down the chordal and bass roles in the band. And he did so valiantly. But in this conversation, you'll hear us engage with Brandon and talk about what it's like for him to be this kind of young musician on the rise, and also the way in which he sees himself as kind of an outsider. You know, he very briefly engaged with the New York conservatory culture and quickly realized it wasn't for him. He has gone back to his hometown of Baltimore and really built this thing from the ground up with Troy Long and other collaborators. So what you'll hear in this conversation is a very energized and energetic Brandon Woody. Josh and I were joking afterwards that it was almost like, you know, you turn the key and just let him rip. because he had so much to say about his artistry and about his passion for this tradition, sort of standing up for his hometown. So I think you'll enjoy this conversation. I know we did. This is Brandon Woody at the 2025 Exit Zero Jazz Festival with me and Josh Jackson. Just saw an incredible set by Brandon Woody.
Oh, thank you so much, brother.
So this is the after show hang right now. Brandon, congratulations on everything, all of the wonderful response to your debut album. And just, man, it's popping. How is it for you right now?
Oh man, I'm in a constant state of gratefulness and gratitude and just thankfulness. I'm getting up thanking God every morning. I'm having a lot of time. Well, I don't have a lot of time, but on my off time, I just like to plan and practice and just stay at home. I don't like to do too much. So since we're doing a lot of festivals and getting visas and just going to be doing a lot of traveling this summer, my downtime has been just inside of my house in West Baltimore. It's been great to be back home, though.
Yeah.
I was out for like 12 weeks in the beginning of the year with my friend Luther Allison through the New Orleans Songbook Tour. And I did a week with Bad Bad Not Good in Mexico. So like it was a culture shift just to even just come back home. But it felt so good as soon as I got back, just being embraced by my family, seeing everybody. But yeah, everything is good, man. Right now I'm just practicing. I'm trying to stay ready so I don't have to get ready. And just keep my plans and goals intact. Yeah.
Yeah. When Brandon brought Upendo to Philadelphia, they played Solar Myth. I saw the gig and was knocked out. And it was during that gig that you told me you had been signed to Blue Note, which is a secret I had to sit on for a minute.
Yeah, I remember.
but I was just struck by the spirit that the band conveyed and the force of conviction and most of all, the bandness of it. Mm. So can you talk about that, first of all, that sort of band cohesion vibe?
Yeah. So number one, I just want to say this is not a one-man band. You know, I'm up here talking, but this is truly a collective. It's about the relationships, the vulnerability, and the honesty that I share with my band members and the way we get to this vulnerability with each other on a stage and being in the present is through a lot of trial and error, years lived together, the good experiences, all of the bad experiences. I want to say in 2018, I actually dropped out of college from Manhattan School of Music and I moved right back to Baltimore, got my first apartment on 1127 St. Paul Street. I actually have a song in my album that's referencing my first apartment. And I didn't even know it, but Troy had just finished up at Peabody, amazing college in Baltimore. And we were living right down the street from each other. And I just ran into him and I was like, yo, what are you doing? What are you doing? Oh, you're living right down the street and we're linking. So I'll say outside of me, you know, the first kind of inkling of like what this band sound was Troy. Once me and him got cross paths again after high school in 2018 in Baltimore, that was groundbreaking, man. I mean, I had came back home with a lot of music, but then also me and Troy, he would come over to the crib every day, you know, and we would write new music. We would develop old music. And I remember we had a monthly gig at this amazing spot in Baltimore called Andy Music. And Henry Wong, shout out to him. He showed us love and gave us a monthly gig there probably for about 11 to 12 months. Without that, there would be no me. There would be no group. You know, that was a safe space for us to be creative, for us to make mistakes, for us to build an audience. So that's how it happened. That's when Mike came along. Mike Saunders, amazing bass player. He's actually not here. He's on tour with Drew Hill right now. Amazing singing group from Baltimore. That's when I met back with Quincy Phillips, and it just kind of grew every day and every month. It was like we had played so much. I must say, I built up my sound in Baltimore. I didn't build it up in New York. You know, it's right. Like I spent what? All of like 8 months in New York while I was in college and just moved right back home, you know, and that was, but you know what I got? Not to say that since I built my sound in Baltimore that my experience in New York wasn't, that I'm not grateful for it, because I am. Oh my God. Stefan Harris, he's the one that got me the, you know, scholarship up at Manhattan School of Music, and it was amazing. I was gaining an ear. I was gaining sensibility, flexibility in the music and technique that I needed to actualize and realize who I was musically and find my own sound. I don't think that could have happened anywhere else in my home city, though. I had to be around my folks, and yeah, and I wear that, you know, I wear it on my sleeve. I wear it on my heart. So yeah, I must say that there's a collective thing, and I love that this is an intergenerational group. You know, Quincy, he being Roy Hargrove's last drummer, somebody that I'm such a big fan of. Mike Saunders, I think he's about 8 years older than me and Troy, but we all went to the same high school, me, Mike, and Troy. And then me and Troy were the youngest, the same age, but we're like that. Mike and Quincy... Before I talk about Troy, Mike and Quincy have just loved on us and taught us without even telling us. You know, it's like some things don't need to be spoken, but you teach by doing. Mm-hmm. And that's how they taught us. You know, Mike and Quincy, man, I am so distinctly grateful for their part in this music. And then Troy, we're like Siamese twins. You know what I'm saying? Like, what is yin and yang all the way. All of our music sounds how it sounds. And there's this bandness that you're talking about, Nate, because we're family. Because we've had good and bad experiences together. I remember we was going up to play. There was this gig that we did in New York last year. I want to say in May. The spot called the Nine Orchard that Stretch Armstrong hosts. And we take the train up to New York. And then we get off the train and we're about to get on the subway. And I'm like, okay, well, Quincy got his drum, not his drums, but his cymbal bag with him. And Mike got his bass. Man, I paid for one. And then I just was like, cool, let me go ahead and open up the door. I opened up the door and we all walked through. Confidence. Two cops were about to arrest us at that moment there. You know, but you know what I saw and what I learned is that, wow, these cats got my back. Nobody left, even though this was my problem. I'm the one that opened the door. I'm the one that committed the crime. You know, and you see that in your worst moments. You know, who is going to stick around for the long run? You might not. It might not be at the beach. You know, it might be, but it might not be in your glitz and glamours. It might be on your lonely days when you see, when folks tell you, okay, I will be here for you no matter what, through thick and thin, and we're going to see it out together. And I think something that is so courageous for my band members, as you know, we we just had the crowd singing the melody. You know, anything can happen at any time. You know, something that's so unsuspected today, and I don't want to, you know, dim the mood or anything, but my bass player, as he was on here, on his way here, you know, Mike is on tour right now, but I got this amazing bass player, Jonathan Cotton, from Michigan. Amazing bass player, upright bass player. And there were actually some malfunctions with his flight. So then he got a rental car and somebody hit him and he was in an accident on his way this morning to the gig. You know, and we never know, you know, why God puts us in the circumstances or situations. However, I want to say with this group of people that I'm with, I know that I never worry. It doesn't matter if, you know, we're few and short. It doesn't matter if we're thin. It doesn't matter if we don't got a lot of clothes on our back. If we don't got a lot of money, we're going to be there together And that's it. You know, I think it's the meaning of the group Upendo is love, you know. And that's the driving force of what brings us together. And then also I think that because we share similar perspectives from Troy being up, growing up in Baltimore, having to catch that MTA bus to school for an hour, you know, almost getting robbed, whatever, on your way to school, you know, it's just like just different experiences that we've all had and that we all can relate to. So when we talk musically, it's just like, you know, I know he got me,
yeah,
you know, and that's such a profound and courageous thing for folks to have your back, for folks to show up for you. We never know. You know, I got a lot of things going on in my life. An amazing shot. Actually, I want to give a shout out to this amazing musician, to two amazing musicians, one from Baltimore, Micah Smith. We lost him about 3 weeks ago. He was, I want to say, 41 years old and had three kids. Amazing, phenomenal singer that inspired me and everybody in my group. And I also want to give a shout out to Rodney James. He was my age, 26 years old, and just an amazing tenor saxophone player from Brooklyn, New York, that had an immeasurable impact on me and on my sound. But yeah.
You mentioned building it in Baltimore, which is unusual in terms of coming to a major label, but not having done the usual come to New York, test your metal, do your thing, rise above.
Well, I think the thing is,
you didn't let me ask the question, but go ahead.
Historically, if you go back in the history books, if you go and ask the OGs, folks had to come and test the metal in Baltimore first before they went to New York. Right. So you had to come through Baltimore to make sure you was good to go up to New York. So I think Baltimore is a fine place of testing the metal. You know, all of my OGs that I want to go ahead and shout out and honor, Thel John Allen, Tim Green, Gary Thomas, Quincy Phillips, Eric Kennedy, you know, the list goes on and on.
Warren Wolf.
Yeah, you know, all of these are my teachers. And, you know, Baltimore is a metropolitan city. You know, we got trains and all of that, but at the same time, we got the Ubers, don't worry, you know. We got Ubers and Lyft. But at the same time, it's a small city. So, yeah. You know, it's a, I know all of the trumpet players in my city.
You ready for my question?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
So one thing I do know about this music is there are a lot of microclimates in this music.
Yes.
You know, there are distinct places like Baltimore. There are distinct places like New Orleans. A lot of metro areas where this music is being created. So I guess my question is, because you didn't really spend a lot of time in New York and getting a different set of influences, and that you did able to create this thing in your city with your peers, how did it affect the sound? What's the sonic identity of Charm City?
What's the sonic identity of Charm City of Baltimore? I think it's
coming into your music.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's we all have a sound of. We all have a rough around the edges. We've experienced some crazy shit. You know, I think the sound is like Mahalia Jackson, How I Got Over. And it's like, you got to tell folks after you got over what you got through, but not during, you know. But then at the same time, the sound is familial. It's family. It's community. The sound is hard work. The sound is intellect. Because everybody in Baltimore has intellect. It's crazy. I've been gifted to travel the world with other folks' bands, and in every single spot that I go across the world, I meet somebody from Baltimore. And it's like magical. It's like a guardian angel or something. I would say that there is beauty, not only, you know, I know this statement is very popular, beauty in the struggle. Yeah. You can say that. You can say that the struggle is beautiful. But I think what it is the overcoming, how I'm getting over, how I'm getting through. And not to say that the grass is greener on the other side, because it's not. It's greener where I'm at. But if I get through what I got to get through, it's definitely going to be greener where I'm at, because I got to water my seeds. I got to practice. I got to show up for my family. I got to show up for my friends. I got to show up for my community. You know, I think some of the album was even about my city. You know, the first song on the album is called Never Going to Run Away, and that's like a promise to myself and a promise to my city. Like, man, wherever I go, I might get the chance to go to Japan or wherever, that I still have responsibility in my hometown. You know, that I need to be connecting to the generation that's coming up under me and the generation that's above me, you know, and be a bridge wherever I can. And yeah, as I grow in my career, I've always wanted to invest more money into my city and just money into the youth that's coming up behind me, because I know that people above me did that same thing.
Baltimore in some ways strikes me, absolutely. Baltimore in a lot of ways strikes me similarly to Philly. You know, first of all, it's not the easiest city to come up in. It's not the easiest city to survive in. And to create a music career in that city is also not easy. So it gives cats a certain edge.
Yeah.
You know, do you feel like that edge exists in your music because of the way you came up?
100%. I've always had it, you know. It's rough around the edges.
Yeah.
You know, it's a certain roughness to it. However, I don't want you to get confused with this roughness with like unprofessionalism or the lack of intellect or the lack of understanding or respectfulness. Everything that I've seen in my life has informed me in making the moves that I am making now. However, what I will say is I don't think anybody can stay in their hometown for their whole life. You do need to get other experiences. So me going to Cali for college, studying with Ambrose, me going to New York for college, studying with Stefan and Cecil Bridgewater was amazing. You know, I think that you also need to know who you are without your city. You need to know who you are without your family and without your friends.
Now, you mentioned studying with Ambrose Akinmusiri. This is another person who plays a lot of trumpet, but the number one thing you get is emotional expression and connection. And so I'd love to hear you talk about, you know, because we just heard you play a lot of trumpet. But I think what everyone felt was the feeling, right? So that's not something that is automatic, I know. And I know you've thought about it. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on this subject.
Every time that I play, I just want to leave it all on the stage. You know, I don't know when I'm going to leave this earth, and I just want to play like it's my last time, every single time, no matter what. You know, that's it. And I think that shit, it's cast out of 20, 30 years, 40, 50. Ron Carter's still out here hitting like it's his last time. So if he's, I definitely can. I would not get tired. My mission is not complete. My journey is not done. I do think that, especially this music that we played today, a lot of it, you know, from the album, is like, it means a lot to me. It's so much stories and narratives. But then also, you got to think, you live with a composition for 8 years before you put anything out, how that thing can develop and then how you can sit with it, you know, through your life and how your new life experiences and your new losses and your new wins and your new tragedies inform this song now. So there's so much. I mean, I feel like each song is a chapter of a book, but it's even bigger than that. It's 1,000 pages on each chapter, you know, and I could sit and someday I could write a book about this album if I wanted to, you know. It's because that's all it is. It's narratives. I'm giving somebody my narrative. I think by me being honest, by me being present in the moment with my band members, and being freeing my body and my soul, that my ancestors are able to speak and pour and use me as a vessel. And I think in that moment, whether I'm missing notes, whether I don't got a lot of chops, whether I'm flat, sharp as a it don't matter. If my ancestors are coming through, you know, it's like, it's the blues. It's the blues, you know, it's the modern version of the blues. So,
that's an interesting thing too, right? Because as you're talking about all of the background and all of the personal investment in these compositions, you're not up there telling everybody, now this song is about this and this is what I was going through when I composed, you know, but the intention, something about the intention projects through the performance of the tune. And that's an interesting mystery.
Yeah, well, I don't want to, because I think in some ways, like when I first write the music, when me and Troy first write the music, yeah, it's to heal ourselves. Like it heals me. I can listen to this music on repeat. But then after that, you know, especially after, you know, we release it and we put it out. This is Troy right here. Shout out to Troy. after we release the music, it's been 8 years or something. It's been 10 years with some of this music, you know. After it comes out, man, let me let you have your own perspective with it. You know, it's like, I mean, I know that, you know, my personal perspective and the history of the narrative of this song is very serious. And that's why I'm so connected to it. However, I think just with us playing it, no words ever need to be said. You know, I want the storyline of the song to match up with the story. So musically and emotionally, in a narrative way, you should be able to hear that. However, I don't want you to say, okay, well, I just got the same exact perspective as Brandon. You know what I'm saying? Perseverance is about just try and go to school in Baltimore. Perseverance is about trying to make your ends meet, trying to pay that rent when you only got $50 in the gut, you know, or whatever, you know, perseverance. I want people to tap into these. And you know, we were very intentional about the titles of the songs. It's like, yeah, we give you a glimpse of our perspectives, but it's so open that you can connect to it just as a good human being. I know everybody has something that they should not be running away from, that they need to meet and deal with and be responsible for. You know, I know that everybody has an impact on somebody that is way beyond the reach of their eyes. You know, I know that everybody has to persevere. I know that everybody has different concepts of what real love is. You know, and this is very like simple. I'm not really getting deep into it. You know, and then even Oda Benga, like a lot of people don't know about him. So me having his name on my album cover, on this vinyl, on this physical print that's going all over the world right now, it's me trying to honor his name and make sure that people also know this part of American history. But at the same time, regardless, whether you get the whole bio of each song or not, by us being honest with each other, I think that, you know, you can take it however you're going to take it. And it's been beautiful to see. I try not to get, you know, pent up too much in, you know, how the music is impacting people and everything, because I want to let them have their experiences and live with it. And it doesn't have to be curated by me. It's such a free thing that, like, when the spirit is reaching through us, it's church, man. It's like we're praising, you know, we're thankful to be in every spot that God has taken us. But yeah, I think long story short, I think by being honest about our story and our narrative and not trying to be somebody else, I wasn't trying to be the trumpet player in New York. I wasn't trying to be the trumpet player in LA. That's why it's felt. Because it's honest. You know, yeah, you're not from Baltimore, but you know what the inner city is like. You know what it's like to catch the bus. You know what it's like to persevere through struggles. So I think because our outlet, which is our bodies, are coming through a pure as of places we can be coming from, and we're trying to do it in a loving way and just be honest, I think that's why people feel what they feel. Like, you can listen to a song and then also the development of the music too. Nate, I must tell you, is like, you know, me and Troy probably had 200 duo gigs, maybe 150. I don't know how many, but we've had a lot of duo gigs where we've just been adding sections. Okay, cool, today we're gonna add this section, and now it's there. next week, cool, we're going to add this section. The music is forever alive. So the fact that Troy is getting better and Troy is getting smarter, you know, and that I'm getting better and my technique, maybe my technique wasn't that great today. However, you know, I'm getting smarter. You know, through experience, you get smarter. You begin to realize how to react to situations because you've been through it. So it's just, yeah, it's beautiful to see it evolve. But I never thought, you know, the song that we got, Beyond the Reach of Our Eye, I never thought that it would have hit folks like that. I never thought that folks, you know, somebody sent us a message, I want to say in 2021 or something. And it was this college student from Berlin. I want to say bass clarinetist. And he hit me and we didn't have any music at all at that moment. He hit me. He was like, man, are you okay with me playing your music for my master's recital? He was getting his master's in this, doing this whole thing that's like judged in between all these people. But he resonated with this music so much, even before it was released, whether it was a YouTube or Instagram video, that he felt like he needed to learn it and transcribe it and be detail oriented about the process of it. I don't know what his master's looked like, but you know, I just, at that moment, I was like, dang, this is beyond the reach of our eyes. That's a testament. Mm-hmm. It's not just a statement. It's a testament that, you know, we will, our actions on this earth today, tomorrow, the day after that, they will go farther than we will live. Our actions impact. It'll go farther than we will see. It'll go farther than we can touch at all times. So I think like that blind faith is a thing that everybody in my group has, that me, Troy, Mike, and Quincy have, you know, and we've been getting surprised with stuff like that since, you know, early on in our careers. You know, we've just been blessed by God to share our stories.
When you talk about perseverance, I'm reminded of the last time I saw Ambrose Akinmusiri in town in Philly, and I hadn't seen him in a while, so I said, it's good to see you. What all have you been learning? And he says, well, let me tell you, Josh, what I've been thinking about a lot more and more these days is longevity. Mm. So I'm thinking about how you're talking about perseverance for one, but also, you know, these opportunities like you have now, they come and go, you know, and this is a great crest for you to ride right now. And I know that you will take as much advantage of it as you can to pursue your artistic vision. But I wonder, you know, this is a long game.
Yeah.
There is a Ron Carter out there at 88 years old playing.
Yes, sir. You know, shout out to Ron Carter.
This is a long game. So I'm curious about, you know, what are some of the things that you want to learn and develop in terms of your own musicianship so that you can sort of be ready for those moments when they come?
Yeah, man. Something that I'm always going to be practicing is just my horn, my technique, my breathing. I'm still practicing major scales to this day, man. But, you know, to get deeper than that, outside of just doing my daily practice routine, I want to practice and just write more. I want to create bigger worlds for us to live and be comfortable and explore in, or not be comfortable. I want to figure this goddamn instrument out. Goddamn, it's hard. Right now, I mean, I understand that. And I'm not his age, and that's my teacher. So I'm sure when I am his age, I'll, you know, I might be thinking something similar. But as of right now, I want to learn how to be the best band leader that I can be. I want to learn how to love my band members as much as I can and provide for them in the best way that I can, as they are also doing for me, because that's what's going to make everything smoother. You know, it's all about the band, but then also, you know, just getting better with building a team, you know. I'm realizing that I cannot do everything myself, you know. So you got my brother Jamie here, my brother Leon. He's doing some of the production management in terms of sound and all of that. So just trying to slowly build a strong and robust team, but one by one, because that's how we built it. It was one by one. Me and Troy got together. We brought on Mike, brought on Quincy. You know, it's always been one by one.
Well, that's how we build the jazz audience too at WRTI.
One by one.
There you go.
Yes,
You know, we are wrapping up, but before we do, there's something we like to do on the late set called This I Dig. It is a fond tip of the cap to Hank Mobley. And it's also a chance for us to share just whatever has caught our ear or eye. So, Brandon, what have you been digging?
Yeah. So let me go ahead and give a big shout out to one of my friends, actually, Elena Casado. She just released her project yesterday. You know, amazing young trumpet player. We're kind of in the same. I think we might be the same age. Yeah. Nah, she's sounding amazing. My good brother, Marcus, I was just texting him yesterday, congratulating him on his new record. Marcus Gilmore. Yeah. A whole bunch of musicians like Troy. He just released some music earlier this year. Later last year. Troy got some music out, which is killing, that you can check out. Also, man, I had just saw that movie, Sinners. So, you know, I'm being inspired by that in different ways. Mm-hmm. Just hearing the damn banjo or that guitar, whatever is a banjo or a guitar, I'm not sure. Goddamn banjo or guitar, same thing. It's all the blues. But man, that really inspired me. What other stuff? Yeah, my man, Indy Buzz. There's this amazing musician named Buzz Donald. And he has a whole project out. I want to say it's called, oh no, I'm sorry. This is one of his songs called Acres of Diamond. And I forget the name of his project, but you can search him up. IndieBuzz. I actually met him through working with Solange. He's just an amazing songwriter and musician. Today we were just listening to one of me and Troy's good friends and collaborators, Josh Stokes. He has an amazing album out called The Function. He's also from Baltimore. Man, that's just so much amazing music coming out right now, all at the same time. You know, so it's an amazing time. Truly, truly an amazing time to be in. Yeah, and I listen to all types of music. It's not just jazz, it's not just classical, not just rap, it's anything, you know. So,
well, thank you, Brandon, for all of those picks, and thank you for your time and all of your insights. How about a hand for Brandon Woody?
Yeah.
Thank y'all so much.
What did I tell you? Brandon Woody, that man has a lot to say, musically and personally. And it was very cool to catch him. If you heard our previous, or one of our previous Exit Zero conversations with Terrence Blanchard, there's a moment where Terrence gives Brandon some dap. You know, he is, he's very encouraging of the energy that he sees in the Brandon Woody band. And I think it's, you know, for anyone really, when you see a musician of his age and his temperament, just the fire that he brings to the bandstand is very inspiring. And I know I speak for a lot of people when I say this Blue Note album is clearly just the beginning, and it's going to be exciting to see where he goes next. Speaking of next, this is the moment in the late set where we toss it to Hank Mobley for the segment we call This I Dig. All right, since I am solo hosting today, it's all on me to be the digger. And here's what I want to say. If you like listening to interview podcasts, conversation podcasts, there's a good chance that you have already logged some hours with the WTF pod hosted by Mark Maron. And you may also know that he recently retired the show, shut it down after 16 years. He is literally a pioneer in the format. He really helped put podcasting on the cultural map. And the show has brought many, many hours of insight and enjoyment to myself and to many others. So I guess my top level endorsement is this show, which is now completed. Check out the archives. But there's one show in particular, one episode from very late in the run that I want to point to and maybe point you towards. I think it was the maybe fourth to last episode that he did with Christopher Guest. If you don't know Christopher Guest, you'll realize that you do actually know him. He's a member of Spinal Tap. He's the director who kind of helped define the mockumentary format with films like Waiting for Guffman and Best in Show. And he's just a really singular comedic voice, also a very, very dry and deadpan conversationalist. Now, in this episode, which really only happened because Mark had a lovely conversation with Christopher's wife and better half, Jamie Lee Curtis, Christopher Guest talks about his path, you know, through comedy. But there's one moment in particular that I have to point out to anyone who likes The Late Set. Christopher Guest, as a kid, I think age 19 or 20, worked as a doorman at the Village Vanguard. And I can't paraphrase the story he tells, but it's really classic. It involves his inability to do math on his feet, collecting cover charges, and his interactions with Max Gordon and their decision to, you know what, this actually isn't working out so well. But he also tells a beautiful story about Rahsaan Roland Kirk, you know, and it's clear that he is a real jazz fan and somebody who had the experience of, you know, witnessing some pretty incredible performances. So, I'm not sure exactly what the time code is, but you're going to want to hear the whole episode. Just be on the lookout for a really cool Village Vanguard story. Christopher Guest on the late and already dearly missed WTF Pod. Thank you for joining us today on The Late Set. It is a production of WRTI and made possible by WRTI members. It's hosted by myself, Nate Chenin, usually with Josh Jackson. The show is produced by Alex Arif. This interview was live at Exit Zero Jazz Festival in Cape May, New Jersey. The house engineer there was Fred Corcoran. Our episode was mixed by Robbie Webb. Special thanks to Michael Klein and the entire staff at Exit Zero. Hop over to the WRTI YouTube channel where you can watch this interview. That's right, we taped it. And other performances and interviews across both the jazz and classical landscapes. We are also very proud to announce the Late Set Radio Hour. This is a modified version of our pod. It's repackaged for the airwaves and hosted by WRTI's own evening jazz host, Nicole Sweeney. As you know, the Late Set is all about conversation with, small tastes of music. Well, the broadcast version flips the script. There are stories built around entire tracks. This is something we can do on a broadcast signal. So tune into WRTI on the last Sunday of every month at 8 p.m. for the Late Set Radio Hour. On our next episode of this podcast, an interview with Mary Halverson, recorded live at Solar Myth. The aforementioned Robbie Webb is our assistant production manager. Our production assistants are Alexander Bolliker, Tyler Deerfield, Delia Joyce, and Alana Beltran. Our director of operations and production is Tyler McClure. Associate general manager for content and programming is Josh Jackson, and Bill Johnson is WRTI's general manager. Stop by WRTI.org to see everything else we're cooking up here in Philadelphia and beyond. We'll see you soon.